Friends, your future may not be as secure as you think. Where will you be when the atomic bombs fall? You can secure your family's future by reserving a spot in a state-of-the-art underground vault from Vault-Tec. That's right. Reserve your family spot in a state-of-the-art underground vault today. Sign up now and prepare for the future.
Dweller, and we're the Vault Dwellers Next Door.
Yeah, we're gonna reclaim the Commonwealth.
Yes, we're gonna fix it up, Wasteland. We were designed to support the reclaiming of humanity. We're the Ghouls Next Door, horror podcast from media literacy podcast from a horror lens. We explore the real life, historical, alternative universe, plus also a bit like our universe horrors, like the nuclear apocalypse and super powerful companies controlling all of humanity and lots of gore. And war. Yeah.
You know how they be doing. It's not funny at all, because it's like that's all happening presently in some sort of way. That's why every single video game generally covers some sort of corrupt government doing this and that and oppressing the people. It's exhausting because like they're all the same plot, just with like a different method. And Fallout's not different just in like that way. Yeah, it's just like companies buy, building, exploit population in various ways, have no moral compass. And we're here.
Woo!
Love it.
Yeah, Thumbs so we're going to have a two-part series here on video games that were turned into TV shows successfully. And you know, we'll talk a bit about that, but I think the biggest part is just these are two really great games that both of us have played in some way and that we have enjoyed for the lore and the world that they create. It's very alternative history and proposed future that we have talked about in different ways is possible. So in 2019, we had an apocalypse series where we talked about the different apocalypses that could occur, like a digital apocalypse, or the very timely viral apocalypse, which was
little did we know
2019 before that. And then we talked about the nuclear apocalypse. So you can definitely learn about like what you're supposed to do in the event of a nuclear apocalypse from that episode. And we'll also talk a little bit about it this episode.
Yeah, I'm gonna cover a little bit just because everything I read about it was like the biggest problem, other than the fact that the government can do that, is that people don't know what to do when it happens. So if we cover a little bit of info about it again, I figured it'd be good, since that seems to be the thing that will kill the most people in the event of a nuclear apocalypse outside of just the bombs themselves.
But today we're going to be talking about Fallout, which recently was turned into a TV show, and people are saying was done very well. And I agree. I kind of watched the first episode just to be like, oh, it's like something to see. I want to see what's going on. And I immediately was like, okay, yeah, I got to watch the rest of this. This is so in the, like, it really understood the humor. And the fact that it is a video game, so there's obviously going to be a lot of gore, there's a lot of senseless killing and things like that, because that's what happens in video games like that. So it was very true to that, and I appreciated that, and it made me kind of sad for like other video game media that's coming out or has been promised to come out. Like, I have no confidence in a BioShock film, and I loved those games. I have like negative confidence in a Borderlands film because of who they have casted for it, it makes me very mad as someone who's played Borderlands. And I like it has a very specific type of humor, and I just don't see that cast as getting it. Or the creators in that way. So, but this one did a good job.
It's super real because it's like kind of like a cursed genre, like in that like generally the fans of these things have very strong opinions, rightfully so, because it's something that like occupies so much of their nerddom. And like to have, it is notorious almost to have a bad live action or like a bad adaptation. So it's actually really rare when they do a good job, and there's a few. I think we're covering like two of the ones that we know for sure did a really good job. And then I don't know, but like it's a hard genre to tackle and people usually do it wrong.
Yeah. I think of like the Resident Evil films or Silent Hill or Monster Hunter, Doom. There are just so many out there that people would get really excited for. And then you see it and you're like, and so like this week we'll talk about Fallout, and then in a few weeks we'll be talking about The Last of Us, which has done a really great job. And I think the key is like including the creators of the game and understanding the game. Like understanding like what is the point of this game. I also think comedy, like if you pick games that also have like comedy, or you pick games that have a seriousness to it, like both of those things can really lend to beautiful pieces of media. But if you have just like overt violence for no like for nothing, I think which I feel like are those other films, it's hard to do. We'll say throughout the like watching it, they would like see a med pack or the like one of the bobbleheads or things like that where I'm like, no, grab that. Grab that.
As someone who's replaying the game, like the perpetual looting, like until you're overwhelmed or whatever, is like something I always do. Over encumbered, yeah, so you can't fast travel, is the thing I always do. So 100% the same thing. And I mean, I saw some critiques of the show, people being like, people were too easy to be like, oh, I love that they did that, included things from the game, and it's like, but they did had critiques of it otherwise. But I don't know. I thought like it was very cute the way that they instilled that stuff in. And it felt still not very much like true to the game, like you were saying.
Some things felt like tongue in cheek, but I enjoyed those parts. I think it there's tongue in cheek things in the game. Like, and there's like the game, in the franchise of this game has like evolved. Like there's different pieces that go into it. There's a Fallout Bible, there's comics, there's all kinds of things that add to the lore of this world. And they all are just like, how wacky is this place? Let's figure out a new wacky thing that's happening. And I feel like the show delivered that. It's like, here's another wacky thing, another canon thing we could deliver, more, you know, messed up vaults. And also explain away some of the things that were a little harder to digest in the games, or understand. And I think it confirmed some theories as well, or like solidified theories about like what happened and what's going on. I think it did that in a great way too.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Cool.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. All right, so I'll tell you about Fallout. I will be kind of just talking about the world of Fallout, but a little bit about the show as well. So Fallout is from, the show is from 2024, and it's about, in a future post-apocalyptic Los Angeles brought about by nuclear decimation, citizens must live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and bandits. And it's, yeah, it's so appropriate. So Fallout is an ambitious, gore-filled, comedic adaptation of the popular post-apocalyptic video game franchise developed by Bethesda Game Studios. The show perfectly encapsulates the grungy, morality-free wasteland and the if-you-don't-laugh-you'll-cry storylines of the games that taught us that war never changes. Set in a retro-futuristic world, which is such a fun thing to say, where nuclear war has devastated civilization, the series follows the struggles of three very different people as they navigate the harsh wasteland of the former United States. Now, the commonwealths, but now the wasteland.
Yeah, the U.S. split up into a million parts.
Yeah, it was split up into 13 commonwealths, and then the war happened, and now it's its own thing. The show is overrun with nods to the games and features delightful Easter eggs. It answers many questions gamers encountered, and the overall story of the games features a vault dweller, someone who was born in the vaults that were designed to save the human race in the event of nuclear war, which has occurred many years in the past. Yes, quotations on save the human race. Generally, just like in the games, this vault dweller is tasked with leaving their subterranean home to venture into the wasteland, where they encounter ghouls, which are radiated humans, mutants, which are even worse radiated humans, radiated disgusting creatures like rad roaches, which aren't very rad at all, raiders, radiated water, environmental storytelling skeletons, and cannibals. So the vaults are created by one of the many evil corporations in this world, Vault Tech. And what we learn in the show, in collaboration with all the other evil corporations in the country. The show's protagonists include a cheerful vault dweller named Lucy, or Goosey, who's left the comfort of her vault to find her father after he's abducted by a group of raiders. Maximus, who is a member of the Brotherhood of Steel, which is this paladin-esque military group that wants to control the wasteland for reasons they believe to be good, but are definitely not. And finally, the ghoul, formerly a man named Cooper from pre-war times, who has been alive since the bombs dropped due to radiation poisoning and a regular dose of a strong concoction of drugs. So throughout the series, the protagonist must make difficult choices that shape the fate of the wasteland and its inhabitants. And these choices often involve moral ambiguity, forcing the protagonist to weigh their own values against the greater good, like slow corruption. And you get in the games, you get to choose if you're going to be evil or good or in between, and which can be really fun and can completely affect what you have access to and how people interact with you. In the first Fallout game, like, because you can also select your stats, and in the first Fallout game, if you put not like very little stats in your intelligence, your dialogue would change. So like they're like, you need to go out into the wasteland and save us, and then you're just like, what? Just like dead, like your options are just like food, and it's like, no, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, they really made it like a true RPG, like reminiscent of like Dungeons and Dragons slash like, I don't know, like I think Baldur's Gate came out, like the original, came out probably around similar times, but like very similar vibes, and like it's like a choose your own adventure, and the environment shifts and changes based on whatever your choices are.
Yeah, yeah. And it and that happens in a lot of games that we enjoy. But like you have options of like blowing up it, like detonating a nuclear bomb, right? Yep. Which could ruin everything, or like making it so that it's safe, right? Like, so,
yeah,
you know, inactivating it. So it's
fun.
Yeah, it's really fun to play those, like that game. And I will say personally, like, I've tried to play Fallout a few times, and there are parts of it I absolutely enjoy. It is too big for me.
It's also scary.
Yes. So it's too big. I get lost. I need, like, you need to tell me where to go. And if I end up somewhere, I don't want to be there. And then, like, and it also is very scary. Like, I generally, like, I think the last, like, mission I was on, I was, like, in a hospital. And I was like, there's going to be so many scary things. And anytime I go close to the water, they have those big crabs. Listen, crabs are scary regularly. And then they're huge. The Mirelurks, is that what they're called?
Yeah, Mirelurks.
Terrifying. I can't. Those are the scariest things in the game. I refuse.
Yeah, honestly. Otherwise. I agree. I don't mind the ghouls or the super mutants. Like, because you at least, like, know what's happening. But, like, anything outside, like, all the bug-themed creatures or like crustacean themed creatures freak me out absolutely, because they make that awful sound, like you can't wear headphones while playing Fallout because that's all like that like clicky clicky chittery
and
sound,
like skittering. It's
so horrifying. And then like you can hear it before you see it, and that's even worse.
And you have to do it, like you have like Yeah. You have to go and be the person who's like taking care of this and making decisions. Like, if it was just me talking to people, if I could do like a safe zone, just go to like different towns and be like, let me talk to these people and solve a mystery, I think I would enjoy Follow a lot more. But it's like, it's hard and it's too big and it's scary.
I've been replaying it, the fourth one specifically in 76, because they updated it a bunch. But there's been like multiple times where like Isaiah's just sitting next to me and like a rad roach will approach out of nowhere and I'll be like, ah. And he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's just a bug. We're cool. Everything's fine. No big deal.
They're so scary.
But like, I'll like shriek and I'll be like, what's happening to you?
Yeah. I can't. Yeah. It's so scary. I can't. But with the show, obviously these characters are making their own choices. But it is really fun to see like how some people were corrupted by the wastelands, like you get with the ghoul, how people reframe their perception of good and right, which you see with Maximus, and then holding on to your morals and to be a good person, even in the face of really awful things. And while people treat you terribly and tell you that it's only a matter of time before you're corrupted, and to hold on to that is very strong. It's like one of the strong, she's like one of the strongest people in the wasteland. And that's
Because it's a choice. And then they give you the illusion that it's not a choice to make better choices. Because it's the only way you can cope with the horrible things that you've done. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Humanity.
I think she sunk all her costs into her stats into charisma and constitution.
Yeah.
Because she'd be hardy and like wavering people. Like she fully did that. And Maximus should have put more points in dexterity.
Yeah.
Boys of Clutz. So Fallout combines elements of science fiction, horror, and political intrigue to create a compelling and immersive narrative. With its rich lore, complex characters, and morally gray dilemmas, it offers viewers a thought-provoking exploration of what it means to survive in a world teetering on the brink of oblivion. So let's crawl out through the fallout, baby.
It's the best part of the, it's so fun.
The music, I literally, like, again, I didn't play the games first. I always try, and then I would be like, ugh. But I have the many playlists saved on Spotify and will constantly listen to them, just like
regular. And just like belt it in my house and as it stares at me like I have three heads because I'm like dramatically singing like 1920s
around like, girls, 50. Girls, watch it,
watch out. That's so great.
They're all amazing. So highly recommend just to listen to the music. Let's talk about the world of Fallout. And then I do want to talk about the different vaults because they're crazy. And I think that's one of the most interesting things and what people want to hear about. So the world of Fallout is an eerie near future that blends futuristic tech with the charm of the 1940s, like 1940s, 50s aesthetic. Kind of like what... Don't Worry Darling was trying to do. Same aspirations of, you know, idealizing a time period. So the world of Fallout resembles the imaginings of sci-fi creators like Ray Bradbury or the 50s future aspirational future, the aspirational future of the 50s known as the world of tomorrow. So there was like the World's Fair and people were envisioning like, what is the future going to look like?
Yeah.
And this is kind of what they predicted because they're going from the lens of where they are now. Like you can understand what technology will look like in the future. You can only like make those leaps based
on
what
we have access. We'll have a computer in our hand.
Yeah.
It's a but it's, point.
Yeah, instead of a cell phone. Like, yeah, I have a computer on my wrist all the time. It's just significantly smaller than this. And it's not connected to like my body in that way, but it does track how many steps I do and if I stood up. So not far
same
on.
same they just but different
didn't, you know get it would look big and clunky because that's what tech looked like. They had no idea it could be so small.
Yeah, their cell phones were bricks. That's point, done, right? Diverting.
So in this world, the world of tomorrow, right, the people of our past predicted science fiction inspired technology like house cleaning robots and super intelligent computers, water purifying chips, and convenient inventions to make the life of a regular housewife one of ease, right? It also was like our life, but better. What could improve it? Let's be aspirational.
Yeah.
right? And according to the very helpful wiki page for Fallout, this difference in envisioned futures stems from a decision to focus on different technologies at a pivotal time in the U.S. And they say, instead of working to develop miniaturized electronics and green technologies, post-World War II humanity in the Fallout universe invested its technological efforts in massive supercomputers. And we see that in supercomputers in one specific like intelligent computer called Zax. So further harnessing the atom, inventing compact nuclear fusion power generators, and an enhanced and miniaturized form of nuclear fission, as well as more advanced robotics, cybernetics, and genetic engineering that we currently possess in our universe. This meant that things like power armor and laser weaponry could be built, as well as a large number of housekeeping robots used by Americans before the Great War. Many such power sources continue to function hundreds of years after their construction. So it was like they developed their technology rapidly by focusing on different parts of it. And so it still had those clunky big versions, because instead of like, let's see how we could do this more efficiently,
Terminator. Yeah.
Let's do it in green ways so we're not using like the same clunky technology to get things done.
Yeah,
you know, that burn up a little faster. It's like, no, we're gonna.
But then you have the evolution of that even further with the synths, which is like it's like a whole other game within a game. It's wild.
Yes. The world of Fallout is a what if of drastic proportions, wondering at the state of our world if we hadn't adapted to different technologies or ways of thinking. The fear of communists at its loudest and most notably dangerous during the Red Scare is still rampant in 2077 before the bombs drop. So that's a big deal. Because so for people who might not understand, the Fallout world, their war happens in 2077. And then the Fallout games take place like 200 plus years in the future of that. So like the 1950s aesthetic somehow held on to 2077. So I guess if it's good.
Ironically, the same one that they use for the same year that they use for Cyberpunk.
Yes.
Fallout.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not that far away.
It's going to happen in our
lifetime. Fingers crossed. I wonder what the year was for Star Trek. We'll have to look that up. Because if it's also 2077, I'm going to lose it. Radio is the most common form of entertainment instead of the TV. Food products mirror the popularized TV dinner era, like box mac and cheese, canned meat, Salisbury steak TV dinners, etc. The wiki also explains that contemporary 2070s singers like Vera Keys and Dean Domino would get their start recording on holotapes rather than vinyl records, and their music, as well as posters for other pre-war acts like Danny Parker and Paul Clooney, suggests that genres associated with the 1950s in our timeline either remained popular until the war or had experienced a resurgence in the preceding years. So it's like, either we thought the 1950s were so cool, we can't let them go, or they came back, which also happens. Further, the world has been described by creators Jonathan Nolan and Walton Goggins in interviews for the 2024 Fallout TV series as a world where America did not experience the Vietnam War, the Watergate scandal, or the Woodstock-type counterculture of the 1960s. And it never had a conversation with itself about its own sins and transgressions. Instead, they describe it as one where America stayed in its Eisenhower era of swagger until coming to an end with the Great War of 2077. So I'll talk also like just a little bit more about the differences, but those are some of the key ones. Like we kept on idolizing the 50s. We didn't get to the point where we would criticize the idolization of that era of time. So then we just kept it going. That's why there's so much like anti-communism rhetoric and some other just super cringy things.
Classic US.
Yeah. Thanks to an article on GamerRant called Fallout's Alternate History, The Biggest Differences from Ours, I found some of the key historic moments that differ between our world and Fallout's, including like no Watergate, no like that, no Vietnam War. And so including a samurai from the 1600s who can become a companion is found on an alien spaceship called Mothership Zeta. So the fact that aliens were here in the 1600s, grabbed a samurai that you can then be friends with, crazy. Yep. In the world of Fallout, aliens have made physical contacts with humans several times. Yeah. 2077, right? Different people landed on the moon and on a different date, meaning the U.S. is gets to space first, not the USSR. And further, China replaced the Soviet Union as the opponent of the U.S. So instead of us being against the Soviet Union, having the Cold War, we were against China. So that article goes on to say, in the world of the Fallout universe, the Cold War never happened. The war was anything but cold, with nuclear bombs dropping within moments. A big reason why China became such a massive powerhouse was because of its economic reforms to enable a free market. This, coupled with its dedicated resources, has led to this country being one of the most influential in the world. However, around the same time, China in the Fallout universe never even proposed these radical economic reforms. It seems the threat of war was so omnipresent all the time that people just had different things to worry about. The Soviet Union dissolved in 1991 instead of becoming Russia and the many other countries that made up the Union. In the Fallout universe, the Soviet Union existed well into the 21st century, and the country even launched a few nukes during the Great War. So the USSR is still there. It's just not our enemy number one.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest changes is that the U.S. was split into 13 commonwealths instead of states. So those states are broken up into bigger regions known as commonwealths for reasons. It was like supposed to help, but everyone just hates each other anyway.
Yeah.
Within their commonwealth. They're like, I hate being in this commonwealth with Georgia. Get over it.
Alabama. I mean, it sounds you both like together. What I know, but it sounds like what would happen.
Yes. Overall, there's no one pivotal change as the differences are sprinkled throughout to offer a strange Mandela effect world where Bonnie and Clyde are now Vicky and Vance, or the Washington Post is called the Capital Post, and we have Vim, soda, and more. And they're also their obsession with tube technology, notwithstanding.
Yeah.
Big weird things. So let's talk about hashtag Vault Life. Because what I find really interesting and what my favorite part about most video games is like when you read stuff and you learn about the world by just like I can spend hours just looking up books. Like I grab one thing about Baldur's Gate and me playing it is my like inventory at my base is like 80% books.
Same. I'm like, must pick up every book. There are secret quests within these tomes, you know?
And like maybe sometimes three of them will give you something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like 80% book. It's stupid.
It's the gambling.
But I love that. I spent hours in Mass Effect reading the lore of every alien race. Like, I don't know. It's cool. It's like reading regular, you know? So I think what's interesting is the vaults and what each vault, like what happened in the vaults, and especially because like we're existing in a time so far into the future, like this stuff already happened. And so you have to piece together those stories by reading like the logs on the computers or hearing from other people who survived it or reading comic books or watching this TV show, like all these different things.
Gabe, you know, I love it. Found footage.
Yes. That's true.
It is just found footage.
It just but feels
you're the
real.
One finding it. Yeah. No, it's so real. And The Last of Us, it also does that. Like, there's the show highlights the stuff that you might miss as a viewer in the books, where, like, similar to this, the show gives you a little peek into, like, if you're not reading all the vault lore, you don't know what experiments have been happening or, like, that it was all orchestrated. You know, it's a whole thing. It's super interesting. So, I totally agree.
Which is, like, that's one of the things I really enjoyed about, like, Silent Hill. And that's what they miss in the films, is that it's so much more in this one story instead of being about the world of Silent Hill. And that, like, that's where they're missing it. I'm like, what are you doing? This is silly.
Character development, choices. Yeah.
And one of the most controversial and most amazing episodes of Last of Us, which we'll talk about next, is like a developed, like fully developed story that you can encounter and learn about
in the game,
but done better. They were like, let me try again. So what I find really interesting about the Fallout world is the vaults, because Vault-Tec is the company, the evil company, designed these vaults to experiment on the human population. Classic. So they told everyone it was to save them, but it was not. So you learn this through playing the games, and it is revealed at the end of the show how such a program could be created and guaranteed. But it is very interesting to do. So if you're intending to play the games and you want to learn about it in piecemeal, you could do that. This is by no means all of the vaults. Some of them are boring. some of them, again, are just in, like, there's a lot of control vaults, and then there's some that are in different comics and stuff that I haven't heard about. But I wanted to talk about some of the different vaults and the experiments associated with them. So here we go. So vault number 3 is a control vault found in New Vegas, which is one of the Fallout games, where the inhabitants chose to remain in isolation for over a century until a water leak forced them to open for trade. And the vault was subsequently massacred and taken over by fiends, which I kind of see a little bit of that in the show, although there is different motives in what is happening. But yeah, they were like, we're going to chill in here. Until they couldn't.
Don't go outside.
Vault 4 is a well-known experimental vault featured in the Fallout TV show, where scientists adopted a policy of letting in survivors to use as genetic experimentation test subjects. So subjects broke free and killed the scientists, but continue to inhabit the vault and accept outsiders, acting as a true refuge from the waste. So in the show, we see genetically altered people whose ancestors had been experimented on. That was my great grandfather. It was like, ooh. Vault 11 is one of the most acknowledged to be the worst. I highlighted in my notes the ones that are the most scary or upsetting. And so this one, I think, is up there. And a lot of people agree. So this is a social experiment vault that was found also in Fallout New Vegas. And so Vault 11's inhabitants were instructed to select one of their own as a human sacrifice each year. So they would select this person to be the overseer for the year. Which happens off, any election vault would have an overseer, usually for more than a year. But this one is at the end of your term, we're going to kill you. And they were told that the vault would shut off its life support systems and the entire population would die if the sacrifice was not made. But in reality, should the vault's residents refuse to sacrifice someone, the vault would provide an automated message congratulating them as a shining example of humanity. But by the time that they decided they were done with these sacrifices, they couldn't do it anymore and bravely refuse. Its population had been whittled down to a mere 5 people. So a whole vault, now 5 people, and unable to cope with their guilt after their brutal realization, 4 of those 5 people elected to commit suicide. So it's a very sad vault. And that one, you learn as you're peeking through it, and then you find the four bodies, and you're just like, wow, this is depressing. Oof. Vault number 12 is a faulty vaulty with a door that was designed to not seal properly, resulting in the inhabitants becoming ghouls who later founded the city of Necropolis. This is found in Fallout 2, and it was it would shut except a little bit, so then they were essentially cooked in there and didn't know, and they became ghouls. But they really, they controlled it. They made the city. But it is really sad because they thought they were going to be fine.
Yeah.
Vault 13 is famous for being a home base vault for your character in Fallout and Fallout 2. And this control vault was a wonderful place to live until the water chip broke. That happens a lot. And our vault dweller hero had to venture into the wasteland to repair it. Vault 15 is a social experiment with inhabitants from diverse ethnic and religious backgrounds living together. And the vault's opening was intentionally delayed by several decades in hopes that people would be mad at each other because there are different religions and we know how that works now. So, and we have a whole world between us or around us for us to move around. We don't have to be in the same place. And they did. So, Vault 19, social experiments studying effects on factionalism and means to induce paranoia and mistrust. So inhabitants were divided into rival blue and red sectors, and inhabitants subjected to subliminal messaging and faked acts of sabotage. Many developed symptoms of psychosis, and the ultimate fate of the inhabitants are unknown. This is also found in Fallout New Vegas. And so essentially it was like, you're on this team and you're on that team. And yeah, it's like that social experiment the teacher did, where it's like, if you have blue eyes, you're really smart. And then it was like, psych, I just learned it's actually brown eyes. And you see how they like changed, and they were like, would rule the classroom.
Yeah.
So like, you know what I'm talking about? I think it was called Wave.
Yeah. It's to show like how people will basically act in those kind of scenarios.
Yeah. It was to like explain how something like the Holocaust could happen. But we could see that right now. We don't need a social experiment. It's happening in the world. So Vault 21 is a social experiment studying the effects of excessive gambling. All disputes were to be resolved through games of chance. Inhabitants maintain a stable community until 2274, when Robert House successfully won ownership of the vault in a game of blackjack and converted it into a hotel. And guess which game this is in?
Vegas.
Gambling. It's in New Vegas. It's like Atlantic City. Vault 22, this is another one that is super scary. It's scary in like what happens like in the end, and like what you encounter is scary, but like I get what they were trying to do. It wasn't as evil, like, you know.
Yeah,
so
good
this
intentions pave the road to bad, you know, sometimes.
Exactly. Research, this is a research facility studying and creating genetically modified crops and flora, which resulted in modified fungal infections, which transformed inhabitants into spore carriers, aka The Last of Us.
Yep.
And this is also Fallout New Vegas, baby. It's full of really scary ones. But you have to go.
Yeah, Vegas is scary. I started to play it. I was like, no, this is too much. I stopped.
So
I watched videos on it instead.
Like a bait. Yeah, Fallout 27 is referenced in the Fallout TV show. In the end, when a representative from Evil Org Big MT suggests a vault that's purposely overcrowded to force residents to compete for survival, and is purposely overcrowded by 2 times its maximum capacity, and you can imagine what happens. And that's literally like these vaults just pop up from like someone mentioning it offhand. Vault 29 separated children under 15 from their parents, so essentially splitting families up. And this is found in the Fallout Bible, so this isn't even something you encounter, which is like, ooh. Fallout Vaults 31, 32, and 33, this is spoilers. So if you are going to watch the show,
don't listen,
skip
here.
This. Like, speed up like 5 minutes. And no. So this is a social experiment consisting of 3 interconnected but divided vaults, ostensibly as extra security from threats, but also for support during crisis. Secretly a pet project of Bud Atkins, who was a Vault Tech sales executive who sought to use the vaults to create a population of loyal Vault Tech employees to monopolize the wasteland. Vaults 32 and 33 house regular populations, while 31 house cryogenically preserved Vault Tech executives directed to go out to the other vaults and indoctrinate them towards Askin's directive, with the truth hidden from the other 2 vaults. However, Vault 32 found out the truth about Vault 31, revolted, and ultimately died from infighting, suicide, and or starvation circa 2294. And it was briefly taken over by Lee Moldaver's raiders to get to Vault 33, and then later resettled by dwellers from Vault 33 in 2297, and it is in the TV show.
Yeah, additionally gross, they used it as like, they're the best leaders, so they're like breed with them to make better humans.
Yeah.
It was gross.
Yeah. And like, this is how we get them in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross.
And like, just think about it. Like, these people from 31 are from the before times. So like, they have an upper hand.
Yeah.
Like, in intelligence, the fact that they had schooling and just had like a basic understanding of the world, like they have like street smarts and book smarts that vault dwellers will never have.
Yeah, it's just super manipulative. It's gross.
Yeah. Vault 34 was a social experiment in which inhabitants were provided access to an overstocked armory with no security measures. It had more guns than people. But the inhabitants manually installed locks on the armory and restricted access to vault security. They were like, no, we're not going to do it. And every one of their overseers was like, no, you can't go in there. If you want to fight, fight regular. Yeah. This is in New Vegas. Vault 51. This is another one that it's not so much scary, but I think it's one of the most effed up ones, is reference in the Fallout show where Evil Org Repcon wants to have a vault governed by a robot. So in this one, it's a social experiment in which a Zax AI, so this is a supercomputer, was tasked with selecting an ideal overseer from the vault population. And then they have this guy, he was like a, I might be misremembering this, but they had like a military guy or someone who like is in the know kind of counseling the AI. And he says to Zax, like, we won't really know if someone's ideal or like the times when you know someone is a strong leader is in times of crisis. Because Zax was like, nobody's worthy. Nobody's got what it takes. And he's like, well, nothing bad has happened yet, so everyone's just regular. And so Zax was like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. And so he started manufacturing crises to test the abilities of inhabitants. And the crises eventually escalated to lethal threats and then direct manipulation, encouraging the remaining inhabitants to kill one another. So he was like, oh, okay, they need to be tested. He was like, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. A robot wouldn't get it.
Robots. No.
Yeah. Vault 57's experiment was to see how a vault's population of non-drug addicts would react to addictive materials in their food and water. So they specifically gave a large supply of meat from a Redmond special food shack that was laced with Colombian argument powder. There were smaller amounts of it in drinks and food, but mostly in the popular foods. So they just started slowly poisoning people with...
What is this? Reality? Oh, God.
Yes. Vault 68, which I think is a true nightmare, number one worst evil place to be, is a social experiment where it was inhabited by 999 men and one woman. And you can imagine how this went. I choose the bear. This is mentioned in a webcomic called One Man and a Crate of Puppets. It's just, it's briefly mentioned. Like, it's not something you encounter. But, oof, that's gross. I don't even, like, you can play your imagination, put those two together. Reaction to that one, there's also Vault 69 eye roll, which is essentially death by snoo snoo experiment with 999 women and one guy.
Yeah.
So he, you know, I'm sure it was a lovely place, to be honest. honestly, yeah. Yeah. And the way that like pregnancy works in the 999 men, you got one at a time. You got to wait 9 months for her if she doesn't kill herself. You got to wait 9 months. In the Vault 69, 999 women, you have 999 chances to get people to have people pregnant all at the same time.
We can double the population. Inbreeding.
Yes, that is true.
They're all related.
True. Well, that's cousin stuff.
Okay.
And all the vaults, it ends up where you do that. Yeah, that's why Vault 31, cousins. 32, and 33 has the benefit of like an outsider, even if that was like fabricated.
A gross
you at least
version
have access
of it,
to it. Yeah. Because it's like, I can't keep. I can't. Like, have babies with my cousin. It's all up.
Yeah.
So Vault 75 is another nightmare vault, and it is mentioned in the TV show. And it's a vault designed to train and educate children. So upon entry, the students, the children's parents were separated from the children or summarily executed by the security staff. So they took them away to be like, oh, we're going to different orientations. And so they killed all the parents. And kept all the kids. And then the kids were subjected to rigorous physical and mental conditioning. And those that did not achieve satisfactory results when they became 18 were disposed of. And those that did were harvested for their superior genes. So just eugenics, the vault. And this is from Fallout 4. Vault 77 is a crazy one. So this one was sealed with only one person inside. This individual, later referred to as Puppet Man, initially believed that this was a mistake and pleaded for the other fucking people to be let in. When his pleas are unheard and unanswered, he's just years of solitude that affects his mental condition, obviously. Puppet Man later found a crate of hand puppets, which is where he gets his name, and immediately began to play with them, and he quickly loses himself to these puppets and believing that they're real. And at some point he believes that one of the puppets, which is a Vault Boy puppet, was talking to him. And he tears apart one of the other puppets, who's like a king, and he accuses the Vault Boy of doing it. And the Vault Boy's like, "You did it. You're the murderer, because I'm a puppet." Essentially he kind of goes a little wacky doodle and he escapes the vault in fear of a dog puppet. But essentially it kind of marketed him as like he's so unhinged that he kills and then doesn't realize that he's killing.
Yeah.
And this was in a comic strip entitled One Man and Creative Puppets, released to promote Fallout 3.
Yeah.
So it's not even in the game. Vault 81, promise I'm getting through these, is a research facility where scientists in a secret sector of the vault would work to develop a universal disease cure via experiments on unwitting civilian population. So just people were subjected to horrible tests, and a lot of them died, and those who didn't became like ghouls or mutants or all kinds of terrifying things.
Yeah, I just did their mission in the game. So like the humans that make it or whatever are like having a good time, and they don't know that that's like what happened to their predecessors. And there's like a mole rat incident. It's interesting. It's fun. I just did it. I found the cure. I met Curie. She was sweet. Robot friend. Going to be friends with Codsworth. But yeah, they do horrible things in that vault, as expected.
Yes. And that's from Fallout 4. Then there's Vault 87. This is mentioned in the TV show when an evil Korg, Westech, shares plans for a vault that works to create a super mutant soldier. It's where residents are served as test subjects for FEV. It's in Fallout 3 as well. And they make like super mutants. And I'm sure the show will encounter them in the next season. Vault 92, this is another one I think is just really messed up. And it's a bit like they cloned Tyrone. So this one is filled with skilled musicians to preserve musical culture and talent after the war. But in reality, it was a white noise experiment that drove the dwellers insane, and eventually they killed one another. So they think they're in there to make beautiful music, and instead this white noise is like insidiously like in their brains. All day, all night, all the time, until they're all insane. And that's in Fallout 3. That's why it's one of the scariest.
Yeah, it happens in the world now. But yeah.
So Vault 94 is a social experiment testing the viability of pacifist belief systems in post-apocalyptic conditions. So all inhabitants were members of a non-violent religious community, save a single Vault Tech employee. The Vault Tech observer confessed to the experiment and urged inhabitants to arm themselves for safety. And said, like, don't be a pacifist. It's dangerous out there. They didn't, and they were harmed. And that's in Fallout 76. Vault 95 is another one that's super messed up and unforgivable. This is where they took a bunch of people who were addicted to different chems, and it was supposed to be an experimental rehabilitation treatment facility. So they encouraged them to remain clean by all these different experimental ways, and people did.
Yeah.
People got better and were like living their lives. And then they were informed of a secret stash of chems. And at first, they had recovered quickly, but then they turned violent when the stash was revealed. And that's in Fallout 4. So it's super messed up. Because like you have the power to help, and then you harmed.
Yeah.
It's kind of the MO of the whole show. Vault 96 is a research facility intended to monitor and study mutated wildlife using genetic engineering to develop to develop anti-mutant countermeasures. It was staffed by only 5 individuals and had automated safety measures, threatened to execute inhabitants if they failed to meet quotas due to secretive and unethical natures of research. Inhabitants eventually attempted to sabotage security systems and escape, but they failed and died. And test subjects eventually began to escape the facility. That's Fallout 76 as well. Vault 101. The primary experiment of the vault was to test the long-term effects of an all-powerful overseer on its inhabitants, and long-term meant forever. And as it turns out, Vault 101 was never supposed to open for any reason or at any time. And this is where you start in Fallout 3. You gotta get a water chip or something. Forget what happened in Fallout 3, but it's probably that.
Your dad gets kidnapped and you have to go get your dad.
It's like the show. He's a scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
He was something. I remember they found it was a word. Like,
yeah.
Water. Vault 106 is a medical experiment studying the effects of psychoactive drugs released via air filtration systems. And it was released a mere 10 days after the door was sealed shut. It is mentioned in the TV show and it is found in Fallout 3. Vault 108 had several experiments at once. This one's also a nightmare because it's just like, why all this? So they special experiments studying effects of leadership conflicts. So most management positions were to be filled by a terminally ill overseer upon entry. Power systems were designed to fail after 20 years. No entertainment was provided. An armory was provided triple the standard ordnance in addition to the stated purpose. And Vault was also provided with a cloning device. And a single inhabitant, Gary, was cloned repeatedly. And clones eventually turned violent and overran the vault. It's in Fallout 3 and you find it and you just hear a bunch of them saying like,
Gary, Gary, Gary,
Gary,
Gary.
And then
that's all they say, yeah.
And they come after you and you're just like, Gary's.
You're not Gary. Yeah, like they're taught. Like they eventually like think anyone who's not Gary is a problem.
Yeah, because there's just a community of Gary's. Vault 111. So medical experiment studying long-term effects of cryogenic stasis on unwitting subjects. And this is where your character begins in Fallout 4 and your son Sean is stolen.
Yeah.
You go in, you're like, okay, we're gonna be safe, and then they put you in there and you're like, what the F?
And then you wake up and then you're
and
like,
they stole your boy.
Yeah,
and then
I
you
killed
wake
your
up
partner.
Again.
Yeah.
And then your robot's like, where you been?
Come to miss you. Why?
Vault 112. This is another one that's really awful. I think this is definitely top 5 of like scariest. This is a social experiment in which inhabitants were placed in a virtual reality simulation controlled by the overseer. And it was promised to be like a lovely time. They were going to live in Second Life and just, you know, sleep forever in a wonderful time. But the overseer, Stanislaw Braun, fun fact, my great-grandfather's name was Stanislaw. He wasn't this guy, though. used this for evil, and he fed the inhabitants nightmares where he operated as a young girl who would murder them, only for them to wake up and then relive it. Like, you murder them, and then they wake up back up in the start of the simulation. And it's like, and it's also, like, the simulation is very Fallout because it's, like, you have all this technology, you have VR, and it looks so silly. Like, who would believe
yeah.
that's real? this is in Fallout 4. Vault 118. I'm almost done. Social experiment in which 10 wealthy residents would live in luxury while 300 impoverished residents lived in squalor, with wealthy residents granted total authority. Wow, this sounds like today. Always outside. Lower class section of the vault was never completed due to the embezzlement of construction funds.
Classic.
Super fun. Inhabitants of the luxury section eventually transferred themselves into robo brains to achieve more immortality and continue to occupy the vault. It's found in Fallout 4, and it's a little bit connected to what happens in Vault 31. Do not pay attention to the robots. The brain on the robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the subtitles had it as like the brain Roomba or something. It was pretty funny. also, last thing that I'll just say, that's not
brain
a vault.
Roomba. Oh my god. Yeah.
That's not a vault, but it is one of my favorite environmental storytelling skeleton moments. So this is like when you're navigating the world, another way that you can learn about what happened is that you'll see skeletons. Like she encounters it in the show where she finds like a family that like, you know, took themselves out before the bomb, but you just like you look at the skeletons and then you look at like the poison on the table near or in the kitchen near the soup, and you're like, oh, okay, I know what happens. Yeah. So they kind of get teased by the fact that they have so many storytelling skeletons. But my favorite one is a reference to one of my favorite Ray Bradbury stories called There Will Come Soft Rain, in which a domestic robot, having survived a nuclear holocaust, continues its daily routines in a dark, empty house. So the robot in the story reads the same poem to a to an empty house, as it was programmed to do. And in the show game, there's like a robot doing that. And in Ray Bradbury's story, there's a family in the house who has a robot that reads to them every night as they sit around the fire. And they have these cool mouse robots that clean their house and that come in and out. There's like a dog that's actually really sad. And eventually something terrible happens, most likely a nuclear bomb that wipes them out. I think like you see the imprint of a young girl on the wall in the story. So it's like the blast, but the robot keeps on trucking and the little mice come out and clean up. So there's the There Will Come Soft Rain is a house in Fallout, one of the Fallouts.
That is sweet.
What Fallout and our world have in common is endless human suffering, a hatred for communism, manipulative and controlling governments, and war, which never changes. And as absurd, gory, and comical as Fallout can get, it's in these moments traveling through the wasteland and reading the experiences of people through their notes on terminals, or yes, even through the environmental storytelling skeletons, that you can see the cruelty of this world, which is not so far-fetched from our own. And as Kat will explain in their section, they're already starting to do it, and they've been preparing for a world like Fallout for generations.
It's gross, ultimately. And yeah, I guess first I'll just geek out a little bit because I love Fallout. I think I have like 200 plus hours stocked in the game, like specifically the fourth game. And then I started playing 76 like after it got good, because when it started, it was really bad because there were no NPCs. And that's like half the fun of Fallout is interacting and making choices. So if you don't have that, what even is the game? We don't need like Fallout Fortnite. It's stupid. But essentially, they fixed it a lot. There's NPCs now and it's cool. But I've played this game a lot. I've really loved the gameplay. I've like tried to play all of them, and I've watched an absurd amount of YouTube videos on it. So it's not like Fallout's my special interest. It's not. But video games are. And I have dedicated a lot of time. So I just wanted to give a little kudos. For whatever reason, I don't like how Bethesda does their pricing things and how they do like in-app purchase. That's so stupid. But between this and Skyrim, there's lots of fun to be had. And I had a lot of fun specifically with Fallout. As Gabe said, the game is scary. But it's rewarding, and the plot is compelling. There's like, the creators were really intentional with, as you said, leaving like these story skeletons and like leaving a story in a world that's super immersive and has so much to like learn about, even if what you're learning about is really sad. And it's compelling in the way that it's like believable in a lot of ways. So the use of player choice is something that really does make it impactful. As I said, like more like D&D. So I just want to geek out about that. Like, I really love these games. They're really fun. If you haven't played them, I think they're fun enough to play, or at least like watch someone play, because the story is interesting enough. But this game is not unique necessarily, other than like the gameplay mechanics, in that it connects back to like honestly any apocalypse scenario, in witnessing what people and systems will do in a state of crisis. Half the vaults were dedicated to just seeing what people do, you know, in chaos, for fun, for science, you know.
Yeah,
and how people will cope with such unfathomable disaster. The show and the game complement each other, I think, in that they further develop the lore, and most apocalypse media, it doesn't get away from the pessimism. Like, there's still a lot of like, oh, people are gonna suck. People suck. And it does, like, it doesn't entirely ignore, but does somewhat ignore, like, the way that disaster utopias exist. People, there are people who will do good and act good. It's a choice at the end of the day.
And I will say the show gives us a teaser of that it has existed in the background that maybe we didn't know, with the existence of the settlement that like was rebuilt, yeah. And like there's a whole city that was living its best life because humanity is resilient.
Yeah. And they show it in the games. It's like it's in the first one, I'm pretty sure, the Shady Sands you just happen upon. And that's like a part of the storyline. And it's like there are pockets of humanity that are still doing good, but there's still, as you said, like a fair amount of pessimism that comes, like the wasteland will change you. So the show doesn't change from the game that much in that, but you do get like more, you get Lucy, who is just like such a sweet, genuine, authentically kind human. And her choices are not only just well-intended, but unlike many of her fellow Vault Dwellers and honestly the other characters in the show, she has a self-awareness to acknowledge her own failings and like course corrects. Isn't like, oh, I made a mistake. Let me double down that that was the right choice, even though it clearly wasn't and harmed a lot of people. She's like, oh, actually, maybe that was bad. And next time I don't do that. And I'm going to question that and like look at that for the rest of however long I'm alive. She like adjusts and course corrects, which is shows a lot of like character depth. And I think like something I appreciate about the show is like her brother's like a very good contrast to her brave altruism, but like shares her self-awareness. But he's like, oh, I know that I'm not
brave. Yeah, I'm not brave.
I'm gonna hide in this bunker and I'm gonna feel really bad about that because I know that that was an ancient move and I get that. But and I'm gonna try to make up for it. But like I get that I'm not the brave sibling. You're gonna go out into the world and do stuff. And I don't like it, but I know who I am.
And I'm like still not gonna settle. Like I'm gonna blindly follow.
Yeah. So there's like recognizing like meeting people where they are at, kind of in their apocalypse journey. But as I said, there would inevitably be disaster utopias, hope within the chaos and upheaval where like the intent of Shady Sands, people would band together to build pockets of hope across the wasteland and that those do exist and that they absolutely, like anything else, have the opportunity and chance to be corrupted by power. But that those little pockets of hope do exist. Like you kind of see it in the Minutemen, like you and the fourth game where like you have like they made a big mistake and then you have to course correct and make better choices and help like build stability. And there are like pockets of stability throughout the wasteland. And then also pockets of ew. Wow. Why'd they do that, people? So yeah, it's the game, like any apocalypse scenario, shows humanity's great capacity for good versus harm. And how it's all about what you do in times of crisis and in times of normal. So we kind of explore all of that and it's really fun. So either way, there'd be countless people lost to Fallout itself, and that's what I'm going to get into in a pack. And radiation in general would likely shorten human life expectancy exponentially. So what would radiation at that level seen in Fallout series do to our bodies? And like historically, we do have context for this, Chernobyl, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Like there's unfortunately been real human examples of this and devastating ones, but in the outcome of like multiple bombs dropping across like the entirety of the world, what would happen? So an article titled "Here's How Life Would Actually Mutate After Nuclear Fallout" from BBC's Science Fiction or Science Focus, written by Tom Haworth, they highlight the ways fallout would impact the world. There are real locations to base these results on, as I said, but the most common impact of fallout is an inhospitable landscape. The article said the main impact of ionizing radiation on DNA generally leads to mutations ranging from minor changes to severe health issues like cancer and cataracts. There are very rare possibilities of developing advantageous mutations. Like anything else, evolution is random. So an example of this is seen in the darker skinned tree frogs found in Chernobyl's exclusion zone, which developed in tree frog populations found there to help protect against radiation induced oxidative stress. So essentially the tree frog population evolved to be more resistant to radiation. Another reaction to the Chernobyl incident is the radioactive boars found in Europe in or 2023, and not in the Fallout way, like they don't have like three heads, but essentially they're just boars that look normal but have unusually high radioactivity levels that show up in their meat samples, and essentially they're brought up specifically because, as we see in the game, radiation would inhabit all food sources. And there would be mutations within the food sources that would inevitably impact humanity because we have to consume food to live, and water to live, and that all of those things would be impacted by these chemicals and radiation, that even if we survive the fallout itself, our food sources will have been irradiated. So we would inevitably take on a certain amount of radiation every single time we eat, and that could have long-term health risks. So this could impact food sources into the future with people consuming unsafe levels of radioactive material. Overall, the message is clear. Radiation from nuclear disasters has severe, long-lasting consequences for both plants and animal life, making affected areas inhospitable for living organisms. And despite some instances of beneficial mutations, they are the like exceptions to the rule rather than the rule. And the likelihood of gaining superpowers from radiation exposure is essentially non-existent. There is the chance of like humans in general developing like as a mutation resistance to radiation. That is a possibility, but like extending past that, it's not like we're going to become the next like Static Shock or like whatever superhero falls into like a vat of radioactive goo and comes out. That's not what's likely to happen. It is obviously in an endless array of possibilities. Sure, maybe one guy one human comes out with cool superpowers or ends up like a super mutant, you know, but like it's very unlikely and not probably going to be what happens. If anything, we're just going to slowly radiate and get illnesses and progressively sick, drastically limiting our life expectancy to a point where we live to 30 and then we're gone.
So we want to end up with the ghoul.
Likely not. It's a possibility. It happens to enough people. And I think the ghoul is just a play on like what happens to the human body in the close radiation zones, where like how the skin blisters and stuff like that in response to like nuclear radiation at like high levels physically. Then playing upon like you would survive that and have to walk around. That's what the ghouls essentially would be. So what would we want to do to avoid the worst outcome? In another article titled "Scientists Reveal Safest Countries to Survive Nuclear Apocalypse" on NDTV, there's like a handful of articles about this that like, I don't know how accurate they are, but they're all from like weird websites like MSN.com telling me where to live. I don't know. I don't trust that necessarily, but they listed some, and the logic behind it does make a little bit of sense. So they cover a study published in the Journal of Risk Analysis, which identifies that Australia and New Zealand, along with a few other island nations like Iceland or Solomon Islands or Vanuatu, as the best placed countries to survive a nuclear apocalypse and sustain their populations, mostly because of like the distance from other countries and the fact that some of these countries don't have nuclear programs.
Yeah, like they want to be a target.
Yeah, exactly. And the research focused on factors predicting survival after a rough sunlight reducing catastrophes such as nuclear war, super volcanoes, or asteroid strikes. And Australia and New Zealand scored high due to the robust agricultural production, geographical isolation from likely nuclear fallout zones, and strong infrastructure. Despite Australia's advantages, its close military ties with the UK and the US pose a potential risk. Conversely, New Zealand benefits from its longstanding nuclear free policy.
I still would weigh like I guess it would take the existence of Brad Roaches and Meyer Lurks in the world for me to be like, yeah, I can handle one of the spider seasons in Australia where the whole town is covered in webs and full of spiders. Like, in that event,
maybe giant spiders, snakes in the house. Like, yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. It's already Fallout vibes.
It's like,
just without the radiation.
Nice. It seemed like a walk in the park.
Yeah.
They have huge crabs as it is already.
Yeah. Animal people's doing weird things. It's already kind of happening in that way. But as she's absolutely game, I'm with you. But it's more likely that they would have less irradiated humans than the rest mm-hmm. of the world. I could essentially, the study suggests that even in the worst case scenario of a 61% reduction in crops during a prolonged nuclear winter, the study suggests that even in the worst case scenario of a 61% reduction in crops during a prolonged nuclear winter, New Zealand would still have sufficient food supplies. However, other island nations may struggle due to the collapse of industry and social cohesion. The study also predicts a significant food production reductions in major powers like China, Russia, and the U.S., necessitating the adoption of new food production technologies in the aftermath of a nuclear apocalypse. All of this to say is that the United States would be a bad place to be in the instance of a nuclear apocalypse. We've pissed off a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Rightfully.
Yeah.
They would have every right.
Yeah. Do we want that to happen? Absolutely not. Like, no. The best way to prevent all of this is to avoid nuclear war. But
yeah, let's stop doing that.
Let's not watch at the end of the day. Yes. But the big powers, the big three, I don't know, both like anime, but it's like countries, essentially would have not, it would not be the place you want to be at the time of nuclear apocalypse. So essentially, the ones that you mentioned, Gabe, China, Russia, and the US, are the mm-hmm. players currently. And what they would anticipate being a part of, like, the nuclear situation if it was to take place. There are also articles speaking to the safety of Antarctica, as there are no nuclear sites there. But the risks surrounding cold and winter would still be and a polar concern. Bears. Like, it's not the safest place to be. Like, people would still have a hard time. And also, like, what's in that ice? There's
and what do you eat? That.
Yeah.
A penguin? You monster? What is the war made of?
So, yeah, it's not like... People die from winter now. Like, it's not yes, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's just unlikely. Like, we don't have the skill sets to be able to survive and hunt. And, like, specifically, like, if we were to go up to Antarctica tomorrow. Like, I do not have the skill set, speaking for myself, do not have the skill set to survive nuclear winter or regular mm-hmm. winter without, like, the structure of plants that are like in
society. Yeah. And also, just fun fact, World War Z, the book, they end up like Antarctica is a safe place too because the corpses, the zombies would freeze.
Yeah.
And they can't move. And so you'd be safe.
Yeah.
So that's an option.
Disease spreads.
Just don't dig in the ice.
That's fair.
And let the thing happen.
But if we keep going down the line of like, there will be missiles. There will be bombs. This is kind of, there's a few other articles that kind of outline what that would look like. So in another article titled, "Who Would Take the Brunt of an Attack on U.S. Nuclear Missile Silos?" on Scientific American, this article delves into the potential consequences of a nuclear attack on specifically the U.S. missile silos, the ones that are buried in the ground, focusing on the environmental and human impacts. Most of these missiles are located in the Midwest, and the U.S. Air Force released a comprehensive report detailing the environmental effects of replacing all Minutemen missiles with new Sentinel missiles, which are like fancy new ones, by mid-2020s or 2030s. So that's like in the works now as part of a $1.5 trillion nuclear arsenal modernization effort. Love that for us.
Super important.
Yeah. Who needs food, right? Who needs groceries that are affordable? They're building their bunkers. It's fine. The missiles are vulnerable to attack, obviously, because they're fixed into locations. And also, there's an argument that their existence is an issue as well. The missiles are also vulnerable to attack due to their fixed locations, but the argument on their continued existence is based on providing fixed targets will exhaust enemy resources in the event of an attack. And they're also built in locations that are more like lightly populated. Mm-hmm. The issue seems to be more with the potential environmental harm that is caused by their existence in the first place. The risks for leaks and failures are kind of inevitable in the human experience. The article raises concerns about risk posed by the U.S. land-based missile fleet, including accidental releases of radioactive materials and detonation of warheads. So, like, the chemicals leaking into the ground because they're buried in the ground, mm-hmm. Including essentially it calls for greater transparency from the Air Force regarding these risks, because essentially the government's very tight-lipped. Overall, the article paints a grim picture of the potential consequences of living with land-based nuclear missiles and emphasizes the need for informed decision-making regarding their continued existence. Essentially, missiles in the ground is probably bad, even if it means that opposing countries would have a hard time getting rid of all of them. They leak into the ground and poison it. So, for example, like the radiated boars in Europe, they got their radiation from the truffles in the ground because they're buried in the ground. Similarly, if you bury the missiles in the ground, it's going to poison the food sources that all the animals eat and the water sources that come from the ground. It's like a slippery slope into radiation. In another article on Mira Safety titled Your Nuclear Attack Map for 2023, they unpack the grim outcome of nuclear. It's all grim, just so you know. There's no like, yay, happy nuclear time. It's all bad. No one has a good time. They highlight the areas that would likely be hit first in an event of a US, Russia, and China exchange of nuclear warfare. There's also this like map to test what fallout would look like with the different types of bombs that already exist to get a more thorough understanding of what the impact of fallout in most major cities would look like. I spent at least 20 minutes clicking.
I want to do that.
I already did it. I'd be okay, depending. It really depends on which ones they drop. If they're the big boys, no, we're all dead.
Yeah.
If they're the little guys, the little ones, then we're probably, like, you and me might be okay.
Okay.
But like you're still gonna get hit with like the air pressure and like the radiation wave. Like you have to stay inside. I'll probably
still lose my teeth.
Yeah. But you won't get blown up.
Okay. Woo! Yay.
you have the longer, slower ouch time.
Ooh, so fun.
No, it's bad. It's a horrible time all around. Either way, we know that from what it has already happened. It's effed up.
Yeah.
To say the least, it's a torturous way to go, and it should not exist. That's why we shouldn't glorify stupid films like Oppenheimer. But whatever, we're gonna keep going. Essentially, we need to acknowledge the impact of these things and what that would really mean. But this little map thing essentially outlines what it would look like if these bombs that currently exist fell in certain areas. You could like pick and choose where they would go and like figure out where you are in comparison. And there was like this really horrifying video that showed like the trajectory of what it would likely happen if there was a nuclear attack from one of these three countries and how the other countries would retaliate, essentially. So where would likely be targeted and where would face fallout? Essentially, first to go would be remote military installations initially targeted in the nuclear strike due to their strategic importance and relatively low population density. They would want less missiles to shoot, so they would shoot the places that shoot the missiles. Major cities would be next. Larger urban centers like New York, Chicago, Houston, Los Angeles, and San Francisco become targets as conflict escalates. Coastal regions, areas along the coast, particularly in California and coastal New England, are at risk for fallout due to their proximity to major cities and potential primary targets. Florida, the entire state of Florida is highlighted as facing significant challenges, with many residents likely rushing to evacuate in the aftermath of an attack. Eastern United States, fallout affects most of the eastern United States, ranging from minor to severe contamination. So essentially, like, wherever the bombs fall, like, the radiation would get to us somehow, either it's the rain, like natural weather events, in unnatural weather events, wind, etc., birds flying it from what eating irradiated worms and flying to, you know, where we are. Like, radiation will find us
birds film real.
Yes. Essentially, like, no matter where they hit, it's going to have lasting consequences. Like, nuclear stuff maybe shouldn't exist. It's just my two cents. Western Texas, Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin notably would be spared from immediate fallout, but potentially uninhabitable in the long term due to nuclear winter and other consequences that impact weather. These zones represent areas where fallout is expected to spread rapidly across after a nuclear attack, leading to significant health risks and necessitating precautions and protective measures for those affected. Another possibility is that after an initial attack, the counterattack from both sides would face mass casualties, and the damage would be so horrifying that no further attacks would happen. Like, I cannot foresee, like, once you do it once, enough, ouch.
And then they come back to you.
Yeah it's horrifying, like, enough around? That, like, yeah, they're not going to just keep shooting them off, in my opinion. I don't know. I'm not the person in the chair making the choice, but it just seems very unrealistic that they would just be like, yeah, sure, kill everybody. Like, it, the initial bomb would have enough of an impact and horrifying consequence that, like, I don't see why they would have to keep going. But as you said, people are petty, the rich especially. So, like, I'm not in charge. I'm not the one doing it. So maybe they are that awful. That's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, it's the mutually assured destruction that we face in the Cold War.
Yeah.
Both sides, luckily we had reasonable people with the nuclear codes, reasonable enough to be like, there's no, like, if we start this, it's also ending it forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they did start it, but then they were like, oh, that was worse than we thought, I guess. And that's, it's a whole thing.
A
large contributor to the casualties would also be just from natural responses to the attacks, being forest fires, environmental catastrophes. Like, it would more be the aftershocks of what we witness than the actual, you know, bombs themselves. And then additionally, there would just be loss of life from people just not knowing what to do, because, like, no one teaches about what to do in the event of an attack. So in these instances, there are resources available for educating yourself. And I'm going to, like, kind of run through them, because it's, like, necessary to know what the heck to do if there is a nuclear explosion. And FEMA has a resource on this. We probably shared it in our other episode, so I'll try to go through it quickly. But the biggest thing that they say is, get inside, stay inside, and try to learn of what's happening on the outside. Essentially, you just don't want to be outside in the instance of a blast. You want to get inside the nearest building to avoid radiation. Brick or concrete is best. Remove contaminated clothing. Wipe off or wash unprotected skin. Go to a basement or a middle of a building away from windows. And then stay there for at least 24 hours. Stay. And if you're away from your family, have everyone stay inside. Keep your pets inside. And then essentially, if you have a radio, crank radio or battery-powered radio, tune in for any kind of information to just see what's been hit, how long you're supposed to stay inside, and for how long. And then decide from there, what is the next course of action? Do you have enough food for a few days to stay inside, essentially?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't, get a ham, like, radio, like a crank radio. Everyone should get one.
Yeah.
And a go bag.
Yes, absolutely. And then, like, essentially, like, recognizing, like, your tech is going to get impacted by this. So, like, radio is probably the only thing you're going to have. And essentially, they just say, like, in the event of an explosion, try to prepare as much as possible. There's probably shelter locations when you're going place. It's not saying, like, live in paranoia, but, like, if you're outside, know where to go. If there's an emergency, have a plan of some kind for any kind of emergency, be it hurricane or other thing, you know, like environmental catastrophes, social catastrophes, like have a place to meet up with people that you love so that you get to stay inside and safe for as long as you can. And then to survive during, have a go bag, have like a certain amount of food. If you can, I get it. Like, groceries are horrible right now. They're making it very hard to have a backup plan, have a safety net of any kind. But having a few stock food items is something that would help. And yeah, just recognize that, like, it's airborne, it's probably in water, it's probably in, like, meat sources, and in ground-based foods. So coming up with a plan to maintain being alive with what you have available.
Let's say, just for, like, a place to go, most often, like, older schools are marked as fallout shelters.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see, like, the, like, little biohazard symbol. And it'll say, like, fallout shelter.
Yeah, because during the Cold War, they did prepare a lot of schools to be that for their communities. And just, like, it's a little bit of a distraction because, like, the world itself is so horrifying that, like, what the rich are doing, like, we already know what we need to know that they suck. They need to go away. But there are articles outlining like what the rich people are doing right now with their money, and it's very similar to Vault Tech, and it's Vault Tech vibes, and it's gross. They also have another article. I kind of skipped ahead of it, but is Fallout a warning for a future? Global catastrophe risk expert weighs in, and it's on Vox by Sam Delgado, and it kind of just says what I just said. We're like, we want to avoid nuclear war. That's not the outcome we want. That's the best way to prepare yourself for nuclear war is to avoid it altogether. And that, like, if it is to happen, go on websites like the FEMA one and learn. As Gabe said, go to the schools are likely a safe place. Stuff like that. Having like a plan for if there's a big emergency is the thing that's going to help, because the risk experts, like, is it likely that nuclear fallout will happen? It's not an impossibility. It probably won't be the only way that we go, but like, it is a possibility that it will take place, if not from bombs, but instead from like decaying and irregulated nuclear facilities that melt down and explode. But also, the rich seem to be making moves for what happens after they've destroyed this planet, accounting for the possibility of nuclear fallout in the many possibilities of what will take us out. It's argued that this is just a failsafe, generally purchased with a small fraction of their overall wealth. This can be seen as more of a commentary on their disconnect that the rich have from basic human survival. In that they're like, I want to live forever. How can I do that? Buy some land in the ground. When we are considering groceries a luxury item and the world already feels like a dystopian nightmare, the rich building bunkers feels like a logical next step and not necessarily newsworthy. It's like, we know they suck. We know they want us to eat cake. Like, you know, like, it's already happening. I don't need to know that Mark Zuckerberg has a bunker in Hawaii, because of all the places, ew. Like, so colonizer vibe. They're already doing it. We already know. But essentially, that is a thing. Mark Zuckerberg has a 100 million compound in Hawaii, which includes 5,000 square foot bunker, serves as an example of this phenomenon.
$100 million.
$100 million. Yeah. And there is a significant increase in demand for such facilities, which companies like Hardened Structures or Vivos reporting a surge in inquiries and applications. These shelters are often equipped with security features and amenities, with prices ranging from millions to tens of millions of dollars. And the article highlights the historical evolution of bunkers, the state-sponsored projects during the Cold War, to private ventures driven by wealth of the global elite. However, it also raises concerns about the narrative promoted by bunker building companies and emphasizes the importance of collaboration and community and preparing for potential disasters, because the rich people aren't going to do it. Like, they're the ones who are going to do the experiments in the vaults. Like, they're going to say, like, come join this vault, haha, and then they're going to do horrible things once people are actually in there. All of the dystopian nightmares that we see in video games have already been done to some section of an othered population in the world within reason. Like, maybe we don't have the technology that's proposed in the Fallout vaults, but we have experimented on human beings before in horrific and disgusting ways. So in another article, they compared the bunker and island grab as well as the resource hoarding as a flashback to feudalism, saying billionaires are building bunkers and buying islands, but are they prepping for an apocalypse or pioneering a new feudalism? And the article discusses a trend of billionaires purchasing properties with elaborate features like bunkers, sparking speculation about their motivations on whether they're preparing for something like we don't know about, or if they're just being assholes. And it's more the other one. The article argues that the billionaire projects extend beyond bunkers to encompass the creation of self-sustaining ecosystems on their properties. This trend, exemplified by Zuckerberg and others, reflects a shift towards a form of techno-feudalism where individuals control entire ecosystems akin to feudal lords. And essentially, like, some of this is like doomsday prepping, but for billionaires, it's more like a tiny little speck of all the things that they're investing in. They're also like probably I don't know, I'm not in Mark Zuckerberg's ear, but like investing in things like to prolong human life and stuff like that, because like they know the only way that they maintain control is they're living longer. And a lot of the dystopian nightmares revolve around that idea, is that like they're putting their brains into robots like Roombas, or, you know, they're building AI that replicates their personalities to live on forever. You know, like it's the fall of House of Usher, like her whole project was trying to like download the human consciousness into an AI so that she couldn't die and could escape consequences. So the idea is that like, they're, yes, they're building bunkers. We should absolutely be concerned about that. But they're also doing a lot of awful other things that we should be equally concerned about. And Fallout, it's too real, I think. That's like my only like, ouch, like critique-ish thing about the show is like, it's so real. And it's happening right outside. And that's like, it's hard. I think it's like how some people have a heart. It's both a point of catharsis, but also like, it's hard to watch some of these things take place because they're too on the nose. They're actually happening in the world. And instead of watching it playing a game, it feels ew when you're watching it because it you could go out and do something about it. So it's complicated in that way. But the show is right. The rich are gross. They would absolutely do this. And contrary, there would be people like Lucy. There are people like Lucy. There's people like the people who found the Shady Sands. There's people like, you know, there are, there's good, there's pockets of hope. And there are people fighting. And we see that every day on our phones or we're there in the streets saying that the change needs to happen. So like, it is happening. It's just, hopefully we don't get to the point where they decide to mutually assured destruction us because they realize that society is banding together, so they want to out the only way to win is to outlive us is the whole message of the Fallout show is that they know that they're losing and the only way for them to beat their opponents is to outlive them by living forever cryogenically frozen in these walls.
Yeah. And I mean, like the alternate future where they take off in a spaceship is preferred. Like, do it right now while can still make a difference. Like, take everyone with you, go do it right before you've ruined it so much that it's irreparable. Because I mean, it kind of is already. Like, we're at the point where we just have to soften the blow because it's happening. I was just thinking though, because I was like, okay, if rich people were like, oh, come into this vault to save yourself from the nuclear fallout, like even without the experiments, like in the fact that you're trapped in there for like them to do whatever they want, you're trapped in the underground. So I think I would not go because no, that sounds awful. I don't want to be in there. I don't want to be underground.
Yeah.
And I can't see the sun. And I'm stuck in there. I can't leave. I'd rather just go. I'd rather just be like, no, let me move to New York so they take me out right away. I don't want to keep being here.
That's it's super valid that like the critique of the people who are in the vaults, like even within the game and the show, is that like they had some sort of privilege that the rest of the population doesn't. They were granted through wealth and status were able to buy their way into these vaults. And the vast majority of the population had to sit outside and get hit by the bombs and deal with the consequences that they were putting off for future generations to have to deal with. And they had been there rebuilding and making humanity continue while the rest of them sat in their little vaults and did what they did. So I agree, like as awful as it would be, both from just like a statistical, outline of like what will happen when the bombs fall, if they do, it would be better to be on the outside because the people on the inside like aren't gonna build a better world either. Like it's still colonizing what's left, you know.
Yeah. And if it's those are your people, right, if the, like if this is your heroes, like you're just perpetuating the same thing. Like we're just gonna get the same world and it'll end up in the same way.
Yeah, like war is gonna happen for who's left too.
Yeah, that's why war never changes. Because they're still here.
Yeah.
People who do the war are still here. And that's definitely like what the show is. It's like, oh, we the people who were different had a chance. Yeah.
Yeah.
All that to say, it's a great game and show. It has goofy parts of it. It's very scary. Game. It's very big. It's very scary. But it builds a world that is interesting and hits very close to home, because as far-fetched as it can get, there are parts of it that really ring true because of what we know about the world and the people who are in it. But I do appreciate what you're saying, that there is disaster utopias. There are going to be instances of humans banding together and caring for each other and making a future. And I think that's like what a lot of people were missing in Fallout and all the different games, is like you saw the remnants of those things, but you did, like, they're not super clear. And so it just feels really helpless. And so to see in the show that like there was a time where this was so robust, like that was a very clear next step to what was going to happen after that war.
And yeah, a lot of people from our generation only have played like Fallout 3, 4, and maybe New Vegas. But like the original games, a lot of people just graphically can't go back and play them. They're like 2D top down. Like it's a very different vibe. So you like totally miss the Shady Sands kind of stuff. That like, it's kind of cool that the show picked it back up and was like, actually, look at the nice stuff that happened for a little bit.
And imagine if Vault 31 didn't exist and they never got out, then Shady Sands could have been living. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we didn't freeze the bad people so they could be here in the end. Why would you want to be there? Because they want to be in power.
They want power.
They don't have enough power here now.
It comes back to power.
So gross.
Well, it kind of, it's like, you know, the guy who's like a shoe salesman, but in the zombie apocalypse, he could be a leader.
Yes. Yeah. Which we talked about in Alice in Borderlands. Excellent. So that is our episode about Fallout TV show and a little bit about the game. Our next episode will be about The Last of Us. We've already talked about the game, so you can check out those that episode about The Last of Us where Kat and I switch places, because I talk about how scary mushrooms are in real life and what parasites are, and then Kat talks about the video games. So it'll be fun to also talk about the show now. And subscribe, like, tell us what you like about Fallout. Which Fallout game is your favorite? Which vault do you think is the scariest and why? And would you even go into a bunker? So don't get married.
Delete your kids.
Yeah. Or they take your kids away from you and they kill you, and then your kids have to train to be the very best, but not in a fun Pokemon way.
Or they steal your kid, and then he is taken to a synth land and replaces the population of the Commonwealth with synth humans to spy on them. Spoilers for Fallout 4. Sorry.
Yeah, wow. Spoiled me.
You beat it before.
I never beat it. I can't get there.
Okay,
it's too scary.
Well, now you know. Now you know what happens.
All right, bye.
Bye.